Francisco. It sounds like there are hundreds and thousands of people here.
Thank you.
That's a lot of people. We're at the Young Museum. There's a contemporary Muslim fashion exhibit going on here, and we're part of the exhibit today.
How many of you guys have gone to see the exhibit before the show? A little bit. No one can see your hands in a recording, God. Isn't it amazing?
It's beautiful. It was so. I don't know. I think just growing up doing dressing myself, you know, like it's so hard to be a woman dressing herself and then to have that Muslimness added on top of this. It was hard. And then like walking through the exhibit, all of a sudden I kept seeing all of the fashion that I've seen in my life affirmed. And it was beautiful. It was gorgeous outfits down there.
Girl, there were shoulder pads with horns on them.
I want that.
It was amazing. There was one that looked like a gorgeous hat blowing in the wind, but stationary. It was extraordinary.
But the thing that I liked was seeing the Desi wedding outfit. You know, it was red. It was beautiful. And I was like, oh my gosh, this looks like my mom's wedding sari. To see that in an exhibit was so, it's like, oh my gosh, my mom's sari could have been in this exhibit.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I never would have thought of that.
Does it make you nostalgic?
For my mom's wedding that I didn't attend. No.
Yeah, I guess that doesn't really make sense when I think about the time travel of it, does it? My parents' wedding was just, from the standpoint of an ovary, wow.
So I haven't seen you in a while. It's been a long time. Our last podcast, you didn't make it out for the She the People summit, so you weren't there. And then the one before that, I got into a car accident, so we couldn't record. So we haven't recorded together in like 3 months.
Yeah. Also, like, it worked out that you weren't able to make it, because then right after you texted me that you were in a car accident, then I got an announcement that there was a chemical spill on the freeway.
Yeah, it was.
And it was just like, not happening today.
Serendipity?
Not happening today. Yeah, it's not happening today.
Not happening.
And then I was at Hedgebrook.
Yeah, so you were on a riding
Humble
retreat.
Humble brag.
That was amazing.
Just a very highly competitive riding residency for very smart people. Thank you. It was amazing to be at Hedgebrook because it's like this woman and non-binary like coven. And it's on an island, 43 acres of woods, predator-free except for owls.
Yeah, I heard the owls are really mean there.
They're huge, and they're gorgeous, and they feast on bunnies and chipmunks and squirrels and frogs. And it was just like, whoa, am I supposed to, like, be Sleeping Beauty and walk out and, like, sing an aria right now?
Yes.
It was amazing. And then they believe in radical hospitality there, which is when you don't get to do dishes.
That is the dream.
And you have a chef cook for you. They have a sustainable garden there that they pull from.
So you had a good time.
Oh, my God. So, and it's also, like, off-grid, right? Like, I didn't have reception. I get to the ferry when I'm coming back to reality, turn on the radio, and I hear, I like beer!
Gavin.
Right? Aww. Talk about the rudest awakening of all time. And I had a lot of catching up to do. So I kind of feel like coming to this recording, I feel like I've been under a rock a little bit.
A little bit. But you've been also working on your show.
I have. Oh my God, you're always so good about reminding me to like shout out. I have a show. I have a comedy special that I'm working on with Golden Thread Productions called On Behalf of All Muslims, a comedy special. I just felt like we needed one. I just felt like collectively I wanted to put that out there. Also because I feel like I'm speaking on behalf of all Muslims all the time. Like saying I'm not speaking on behalf of all Muslims. On behalf of all Muslims. So I thought I would just start the show there. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
OBAM is what you're calling it.
I don't know. I'm going back and forth on that. Because when I say OBAM, then everyone's like, just make it Obama.
Right.
On behalf of all Muslims in America. Make them come out of the Muslim closet. I don't know that that's the agenda of the show. And you are a little busy, I think, because
yeah,
voting.
Because there's a very important election coming up.
I registered.
You better have registered. The last day to register in California was last week. But if something happened and you're too ashamed to tell me that you didn't register, You can still register at the polls on Election Day because we have conditional voting now in California. So even though you should have registered, you can vote. You can register at the polls on Election Day. And you can check your ballot information. And if you want some, there's a bunch of fun information out there if you're looking to figure out how to vote. I recommend going to vote.18mr.org, which is 18 Million Rising's website. And that's where we have information on how to vote. And we also have access to ballot guides. Another one that I just discovered was friends of our podcast, Pod Save America. They have an awesome website called Vote Save America.
It's amazing.
It's so beautiful. That's more of a national guide for the rest of the people that are listening in the rest of the country. Go to votesaveamerica.org and watch their HBO special too. It's a lot of fun. But basically, just go vote. There's no excuse. There's no reason. No reason not to vote.
How are you guys feeling about voting? There it is. All right, so this is now, here's a better segue to nostalgia than ovary experiences. We are here at the Contemporary Muslim Fashion Exhibit at the De Young Museum. Tell me, like, what's your fashion nostalgia that you're feeling? Like, where does your mind go?
I went immediately, because, I mean, contemporary is such a weird word, right? Contemporary means anything. It's like the term modern. Where modern is just so relative, contemporary is so relative. So for me, when I was thinking of contemporary Muslim fashion, I was thinking, well, I think my mom's fashion was kind of contemporary because she had to come to the U.S. and figure out her fashion when she wasn't from, my family's from Bangladesh, and she didn't have, you know, the tailors from Bangladesh, and she didn't have access to saris and salwar kameezes. So I was thinking about how my mom used to make clothes, and she used to... We used to go to Joanne's Fabric, and she used to pick out patterns, and I would pick out patterns, and she would make clothes. She would make her own outfits, and that was so much a part of her figuring out her own style and, like, retaining her home culture while figuring out how to live in America.
My mom also cut her own scarves. We used to do that, too. We used to go to Joanne's, and she would cut her own scarf. I mean, you know, hijab as an Iranian woman in the 80s is fun.
So your mom wore hijab. My mom didn't wear hijab. But my mom, because my dad had old school ways, my dad wanted my mom to wear saris all the time right after they got married. And my mom hated it. But she was like, I have to be the good new wife. It's funny because I didn't realize that she was actually fashionable as a teenager because she had like bell bottoms and like whatever.
My mom did too.
You know, and then it's like they got married and all of a sudden they had to conform to like marriage, you know.
There was so much about, like, fashion that I, like, made fun of my mom for.
Like what?
Oh, my God, like everything. You know, like, she would always pick out for me, to be fair, she did pick out for me, like, a pair of MC Hammer pants 2 years later. It was a little while after the craze. You know, I don't know that MC Hammer pants really made their way to Danville, California at all, actually, now that I think about it. It's like Republican armpit.
You know what's funny to MC about MC Hammer? Now they're called harem pants. And I was like, oh, harem pants.
The original.
So Muslim, right?
Right.
It was creeping Sharia before it was creeping Sharia.
She used to always buy me clothes at the, like, clearance rack and things like that. And then the clothes that she wore, you know, is like, always really non-form-fitting.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, when I was a little kid, I always wanted to look like her.
Yeah.
You know, and I wanted to wear hijab, too, and I wanted to, like, dress like her and have, like, the floral hijab and, like, pick it up. And then when I was 11 and she told me, no, like, you know, we want you to, like, fit in school, then that sucked.
Really?
Yeah.
Like you wanted to wear hijab at 11?
Yeah, and I think for me at that time specifically, like, that was when puberty hit.
Yeah.
And it just destroyed my world.
Yeah.
Puberty robbed me of all my friendships because I was a tomboy.
Yeah.
And so then it was immediately like, you know, no, you know, now your guy friends just want to talk about sex and girls, and it's weird for them to talk about it with you.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, hanging out with other girls, they were, like, presenting as very femme.
Yeah.
And that was hard. I didn't fit in, and I wasn't, like, wearing form-fitting clothing.
Yeah.
So it would have been nice to, like, wear clothes more like my mom's because then it would be more cloaking, and it actually made me feel more comfortable because I didn't like that sexual gaze.
I think for me, like, my mom wore salwar kameezes that she would make at home, and I was really embarrassed when she would wear it out in public. I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe mom's wearing this outfit. I feel really bad about that now because, like, you know, that was... I mean, A, it's really comfortable. It's like wearing pajamas in public.
Okay, that's the other thing.
And then like, I shouldn't have felt... But I felt like her wearing it, like, made us even more foreign. And I was so wanting... We moved around so much. I so wanted to fit in. So for me, you were talking about your puberty experience. I was actually living in Saudi Arabia when I became a woman. We moved to Saudi Arabia when I was, I think, 12. And it's like the worst place to experience puberty, especially in the 90s. It was right after the Kuwait war had ended and we were living on the Persian Gulf. And I think like immediately, as soon as I landed, I was like 12 and I had to like cloak. I had to wear an abaya all the time whenever we were out in public. And my dad had got really religious. So he was like, you have to cover your head when you're out. And I was like, I'm 12 years old. This is so ridiculous. I went to an American school though. So at the American school, you just take off your abaya and then you're on your like little American campus. So I think for me, I didn't have the kind of experience you had as far as experiencing becoming a woman in a sexualized area, but it was like kind of this reverse sexualized feeling because like even though you were all cloaked when you were out in public, men were looking at your ankles and your wrists. You know, it's so stupid, but it's like, it's true because like it's just like they're just leering at you because they didn't have access to anything. And it was like disgusting. And I wanted to cover myself even more because of that. And then when I came back to the US when I was 14 and I was like at a regular American high school, I had experienced such an extreme in Saudi Arabia that I felt like in the US it was just non-existent. I don't know if that makes sense.
Such an extreme version of...
Well, like I felt like I could wear anything and no one was going to look at me. And in Saudi Arabia, like it was like I had to dress and be so conforming that I didn't have that freedom.
That's literally the explanation of junior high.
Yeah.
That's junior high in a nutshell. Just be as conforming as possible. Like that was the other thing is like, I felt like my mom would pick out clothes and she was like, I like these colors, you know, and it's cheap. And it was like, these are wise things. You know what I mean? And like now when I go shopping, people are like, how come you don't pick out colors that you like? Dress as your authentic self. And I'm like, you know what the hell is that? I don't know what that is. You know what I mean? Like I wish that junior high was more of a space for me to like have explored that outside of Guess jeans and Gap.
Well, for me, because my mom was making all my clothes, like I felt like I had a little bit of agency of picking out patterns, but I was always kind of like a weird kid though. Like I was not a conforming kid. I was not wearing Guess jeans and any of those brands.
What did you wear?
I would wear printed pants with vests and t-shirts and jumpsuits that had like flower prints on them. I don't know. I was like, I'm just going to be myself. And I think by the time I got to high school, once I started getting really into punk music, I was all about wearing t-shirts that I got at punk shows. And I was like, okay, I was either wearing like punk show shirts or I was going to thrift stores and wearing whatever I found at thrift stores, which was like 70s style and kind of like, I don't know, that was like a thing, I guess, in the 90s. But I mean, by the time I got to high school, my family didn't have money. So it was either going to thrift stores or just wearing the same thing over and over again. So that was my way of
What's wrong with wearing the same thing over and over again? I pick out 3 outfits a year.
Well, I mean that works too, wearing 3 outfits a year, I guess. But when you're in high school, everyone expects you to like dress in a certain way. And I was like, I'm just going to wear thrift store clothes. And it was fine. But also it was a way to cover up that I didn't have money.
Huh. We have like super different experience. Like despite all these different hurdles, you and I have like very different experiences of fashion.
Yeah.
To me, fashion is a form of torment and torture and oppression, period.
Expand more on that. What do you mean? Because I don't get
it. I would appreciate a utilitarian jumpsuit that came in 3 shades that we could all choose from.
Oh my God. I have 5 jumpsuits now, 1 for every day of the week. I swear it's freeing.
See? Put a number on them. Call yourself Citizen 1291.
No. They're like fashionable jumpsuits, not like that kind of jumpsuit.
You got to put that oppressive word at the front of that modifier, fashionable. No, thank you. But you have a different experience of fashion, which is?
Well, I think for me, it was just expressing myself, you know? I think particularly like when I was after high school and I started understanding who I was as a brown person, I was like, you know, I have all this gorgeous Daisy earrings and jewelry, and I have scarves that are like really pretty. And I was like, why am I not wearing this out? Why am I ashamed of wearing the items of my culture? Then I started discovering, and there's been all these new amazing artists that are making things, like the one that I'm wearing now. I'm wearing a Nisha Sembi t-shirt. And she, when I met her, she was like just like a 21-year-old artist. Now she's like making clothing. And I want to support brown women that are making art. I'm wearing, right? And so I make a big point of filling my closet now with brown artists and brown female artists, because I want my clothes to be reflective of this kind of like hyphen that I exist in, right? But like we're making our own culture, and we need to, now that I have a little bit of money, I want to like live that. I want to wear their clothing.
I want them to stop and come up with a different vocation.
I want to wear it. I'm also wearing Ibtihij Muhammad. She has a clothing line called Luella. I'm wearing her skirt today too. So I feel like, you know, I'm dressing like the exhibit, kind of. There's some really fancy things downstairs though.
You have a couple like designers on you right now.
Yeah, I have Luella, and then I'm wearing Nisha Sembi's shirt.
There was something you reminded me of. You were talking about picking out patterns.
Yeah.
So my mom did sew me clothes.
Yeah?
Yeah, most notably an Alice in Wonderland outfit. I really wanted one so badly. And then as soon as she sewed it, I sat in the daisies and I was like...
Was it like one of those things where you wanted to buy it and then she was like, I'm not going to buy it. I can make that for you.
Well, I mean, there was no question. She just like made them.
Yeah.
And I was a little kid, like, you know, so I was like, Mom, make this for me. Good job. And she also sewed for me, okay, Anne of Green Gables. She talked about wanting these puff sleeves.
Uh-huh.
So like she made my sister and I these like matching puff sleeves outfits. We look like...
Why did they do that? They would always like dress us. I have sisters too. And my mom would always dress us in the same outfits. Like, this is, no, we're like, it's not cute,
I loved it. I wore it till I was 14.
Really?
No, not till I was 14. Not till I was 14.
There's always one sister that doesn't like it and one sister that likes it.
Well, I'm pretty sure that my sister liked it because she's ruthless. And if she didn't like it, she would have slit my throat.
Oh.
Does anybody else with a sibling like that? Yeah. Yeah. That you're afraid of still to this day? Yeah. I love you, sis. We wore it together. Like, we had the big puff sleeves. Okay, and the third most notable.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with the greatest immigrant of all time, Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
Birds are migrants. And he had a thick accent, just like my dad. Scottish bird. He was a Scottish bird. And he was rich and selfish. And I was the first of four children. And I was like, yeah, selfish. That's an adjective I want about myself. And he had this like, okay, you guys remember this film he was typecast in because of his name, Scrooge?
That was not a typecast.
It was a Christmas Carol. And he had that like little cap with a little nub on it and the like blue gown. And he had like the brass candle, right, that he like went around with the other night. My mom bought me the brass candle and she made me the little cap and she cut holes in my pillowcase so I had the like gown. And I also wore that till I was 14.
And what did you do in that outfit?
Oh my God. So I was obsessed with this video game, Super Mario 3, the greatest video game of all time. Please give it up.
Oh my God. You don't have to give it up for that one. It's okay.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me? Have you seen video games? There was no chainsaws. There were no zombies. You visited different lands and you had different experiences and you went on adventures. And it was a two-player game and I had three siblings.
Yeah.
So everyone would play and then they would die. And I never got a chance to like build a skill set. You know what I mean? Like Brené Brown talks about. And so like I stayed awake in the middle of the night so that I could like play the game by myself.
Yeah.
And then my dad caught me and he stole the remote control.
Of course.
So that I couldn't play. And I don't know how, I just was like, I know exactly what to do. My hero Scrooge McDuck would not put up with this. And I put on the hat and I put on
the pillowcase and I lit the candle and I went.
Oh, like it was a real candle, like yeah. with fire?
Oh, it was legit. Like I had
Wait, how
even,
old were you?
11.
11-year-old with a candle and a pillowcase outfit and a hat.
Yeah, they had the little cone hat with yeah. the like puffin at the end.
Yeah.
Puff. Is it a puffin? That's a penguin. All right. It's a puff. It's a puff.
Just puff.
And I went, it was 4 o'clock in the morning. I snuck into my parents' room with the candle. And I was like, this is just like the show. This is amazing. Life is like a hurricane here in Zara's house.
Did you sing it as you went in?
In my head, yeah. Right, I was okay. like, yeah. And then I get to my parents' room, and like the shadows are like flickering against the wall. I'm like, this is amazing. And I see the villain asleep. And right next to him on the nightstand is the remote control. And I know exactly what to do. I tiptoe the arched tiptoes that let everyone in the universe know you're invisible. And I grab the remote with one hand, and then the thing you have to do is you have to check to see if the villain is sleeping. So I leaned my candle over him, and he was not asleep. And my dad is looking up at his little girl with this little, like, cotton nub trembling at her forehead and her hand
light.
Just shaking fire and dripping candle wax on his shirt. But I knew what to do because I had expected that because that always happens in the show. The villain always wakes up. You have to yell the onomatopoeia. Whoosh.
No, you don't yell it. That's the movement of people leaving the room. No one yells whoosh.
I distinctly remembered a whooshing noise being the reason for escape.
So you said whoosh.
Out loud.
This sound that is said when you leave a room.
Yes. When you leave with treasure.
Leave the treasure.
Yeah.
I'm imagining you now leaving a room just saying whoosh.
I'm out.
Whoosh.
It means if I say whoosh, it means I got away with something. Whoosh.
And then you left.
Yeah. And he let me have it. He let me keep it.
I feel like you should dress up like that for Halloween this year.
As Scrooge McDuck?
Yeah, dressed up like Scrooge McDuck and just walk around saying whoosh.
Okay, my like switch up for like what to, like how I select costumes now for Halloween, I don't know if this is true for anyone else, but is by comfort. I'm like pretty sure that the last 5 years, my Halloween costume has been pajamas.
I don't remember. Oh, you know, mine, I guess, is also comfort. I got one of those unicorn onesies.
Yeah, and that's pajamas.
Yeah, apparently it's like just, you're just supposed to be comfortable in it, but I bought it. I'm like, I'm just going to now wear this all the time. And it's really comfy. It's like a sweatshirt material. But you know what you shouldn't dress up for in Halloween? Mm,
tell us.
Is as brown people and black people and people of color. So don't do that. If anyone's listening, don't dress up in a hijab for your costume. Don't do that.
People always think they're being clever somehow by dressing up as something topical in the news.
Yeah, don't dress up like the Shepherd Fairy poster either. Don't do that.
Okay, you know what I expect to see at college parties?
Is what?
Like Khashoggis.
You expect Khashoggis? Don't right? do that.
And I'm saying it because I know there are people out there that they think they're being like witty mean.
Okay, what about Kavanaugh? The I want beer Kavanaugh. Is that acceptable or not acceptable?
Yeah, dress like an idiot. That's
okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Power dynamics is everything in comedy. Don't be a bully and take down the bullies.
Take down the bullies.
That's easy rubric.
Anything else people should be?
I don't know. What do you want to see?
I want to see just nice things. I'm tired. I'm tired of seeing evil things.
I'm really with you. Like the other day, I was walking down some street and somebody had already decorated for Halloween and there were like, you know, dead bodies all along the wall and like blood everywhere. And I was like, actually, no, that's my reality right now.
Yeah, no, it's too harsh. Hard.
Like, I want to go, like, if we're going to go Halloween fantasy, like, give me, you know, like, Snow White characters or, well, no, that's problematic. Like, give me.
Princesses, no, not
enchanted
that.
Enchanted forests. Enchanted forests.
But not and creepy things in it.
Unicorn onesies.
Yeah, I just want to see happy things.
Yeah.
I think because Election Day is going to be 6 days after Halloween, I'd like to see people dressing up voting-related stuff.
Oh, like a voting booth?
Voting booth.
Or maybe like a ballot? Ballot.
Maybe the ballot box. Maybe the electronic. Maybe a hanging chad.
Oh, I had a really good Halloween costume once. I was working at a school, after school enrichment program, and I took two pieces of butcher paper and stapled them together over me and drew like notebook paper on it and drew a giant red F. And the kids were like cracking up and freaking out, and they were like, oh my God, Miss Sarah's the scariest thing.
Because an F is scary?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And they like,
that's
they
when you know you have nerdy kids.
I know. All my fob kids. And they were like, oh, F. And then they would like run back and like run away and run back. And then they started like all like writing their name on me, you know, like, oh, look at that. I got the F.
Well, I think that's a good note to leave off on because we should go to a break now. So we'll be right back
after this break.
Zara.
Yes.
I love sleeping.
Oh my God, Taz. I love sleeping so much.
I heard that you spend 1/3 of your life sleeping. So if you're spending that much time in bed, you might as well be comfortable.
And I also heard that a company called Casper offers two mattresses to choose from online. The Wave and the Essential.
That sounds interesting.
You know what else is interesting? It has a hassle-free return policy if you're not completely satisfied.
This sounds like I need to be getting a Casper mattress soon.
Right?
Yeah.
Also, there's free shipping.
In the U.S. and in Canada?
Yes. So if we leave and we go to Canada, we can also still order there too.
I'm so excited about getting a Casper mattress.
And did you know that it has sink and bounce?
Bounce?
And sink.
And sink?
Sink and bounce.
Oh, that does it. I think I need to get one. I think all of our listeners need to get one.
You can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial.
Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/good and using the promo code GOOD at checkout. That's G-O-O-D. Terms and conditions apply.
Always.
Always.
All right, and we're back. And we're going to do some creeping sharias.
Creeping sharia.
Which are all the ways we're winning. And okay, so here's where I'm going to pitch it to you guys. Okay, ready? 1, 2, 3.
Creeping sharia.
Yeah, let's do it.
So my creeping sharia is about two people we've given Good Muslim Awards to. Hassan Minhaj and Tan France, who apparently his real name is Tanvir France. Who would have known? It's probably not even France. Tan France is from Queer Eye, and Hassan has a show called Patriot Act that's coming out on Netflix. And today is Friday, October 26th, and yesterday, October 25th, they just dropped a video where they're doing fashion. So I was like, oh, it's related to our fashion show. Tan is trying to dress Hassan for his show. And it's so cute and so awesome. It's so much fun. I already like love Tan, but like having him dress Hassan was so much fun to watch. Just and like my favorite scene was like when Hassan puts on the sweatshirt and then Tan like chops it into like a fashionable crop top, and you're just like, and he's just like, I can't, why are you doing this? You're ruining good clothes.
That like, actually was my so favorite funny. One. I really like that.
That was so good.
I was like, I could do that to my hoodie.
So happy that Patriot Act's coming out. So great and excited for him. My friend Nasia said that when she watched it, she said, I feel like I just took a vacation on planet Handsome, Charming, Modern Muslim, which is located in the Everything is Going to Be Okay galaxy. You know what? It's true. That's what it does. I watched that video 3 times yesterday. I watched it in the airport. I was like, oh, this is like, I'm just going to watch this video because it makes me feel good. It feels good to be a brown person in America and then know this is the image that's being out there for me.
Hmm.
Because they're not making it for white people. I felt like that conversation was for brown America. I was like, oh, it feels good to not have it whitewashed. It's not like yoga.
What's wrong with yoga?
You know, like there's yoga for white people and then yoga for brown people.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's a whole episode right there.
Yeah.
My creeping sharia is being here at the De Young Us. Sharia creeped. I'm pretty proud of it.
What about that? I mean, you said you grew up coming to this museum.
I did. Like, this is so exciting for me. This is the museum that I grew up coming to as a San Franciscan resident.
And like always when I came to the museum, I was like, you know, oh, like when I would see exhibits, it comes with such a like power and authority. And to be here and see Muslim women's fashion and to see it from all different countries and to see all these different designers breaking the rules of fashion and modesty. And I know modesty is like a controversy, right? Like some people are like, oh, this is an opportunity to express modesty. I'm not of that camp. And I'm open to like disagreement. Usually I will say my opinions are facts. And that's how I feel about my tan jumpsuits. But with this, like, I know there are a lot of different opinions, and I know it's something that is like evolving and growing, and you know, there's a lot of gaze upon gaze upon gaze, and so it's a constant conversation.
Yeah.
For me, like to be able to be here as a little kid who was always like looking out to see what's right,
yeah,
and how I should behave and how I should look, it's really amazing to have it be that I'm here sharing my stories to this beautiful audience. On a Friday night.
It's fatwa time. Doesn't matter if you're uncomfortable, we're going there.
I want a fatwa non-voters.
I think that's solid.
No, is that, I feel like I do that every
month. Or non-voting. We try not to fatwa people. We try not to do that.
The non-voting people.
The modifier. Just non-voters. Non-voting.
Okay, if not them, bird scooters?
Okay, what?
You know, these birds, I went to San Diego and there were bird scooters on every corner.
It was like
it's a scooter and like you rent it on your phone. It's so obnoxious. And then they just like take up all the sidewalk space. Like why isn't there a designated place like bike racks for scooter racks?
Wait, are you saying that they just like leave them on the sidewalk?
That's what it feels like.
Just like wherever. There's no like ride share.
Yeah,
like,
I want to take them and share. I just want to like put them on a pile. I bet people do that. I want to turn them into an art installation.
Can you just take them?
You can, but you can't without... I think there's a lock mechanism on it, so you can't ride them unless your phone is next to it or something.
But Taz, what if it's the only way you could get to the ballot box?
Then you need to, like, download it on your phone and... Whatever, people can get Lyft. Lyft is offering people rides to the ballot box. So
really?
If you have an issue getting to your ballot box, just call a Lyft.
No way!
Don't do Bird.
Dang, go Lyft. Look at that. They'll give you a free ride?
Maybe it's in certain places, but I've been reading it on social media.
How many times can you vote in a day?
Just once. Vote once.
Couple.
What's your fatwa?
All right, my fatwa is the term cultural Muslim.
I hate that term. Like, what does that mean? That means nothing.
Okay, one of the effects of colonialism on religion is this, like, washing away of all of its complexity and turning it into parts and sections, you know, that we call identity. But it's just, like, more categories to label you as other, you know? And it's, like, to identify one part of a religion as political, one part of a religion as spiritual, one part of a religion as cultural. It's like, what? You know what I mean? Like, to even suggest that, like, religion as a category can define me wholly, and then to subcategorize that as, like, culturally Muslim underneath that is just, like, cutting away and cutting away and cutting away and putting aside, you know? And I won't give into that. I'm going to say my pork-eating, alcohol-drinking, married to an atheist, surfer boy, adequate idiot is Muslim. My bisexual queer self, my, you know, kind of genderqueer, like figuring it all out self is Muslim.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in an event and someone referred, they were like, oh, I'm so excited to hear about your podcast. I'm just a cultural Muslim. I was raised Muslim. And I was just like, you know what? There is room for you to be Muslim without having cultural in front of it. Like you can just be Muslim and you don't need to add other extra things.
Like who are you saying owns that?
Yeah.
Right?
Or like, and it made me feel like a little bit worse. Like it was like, oh, I'm just cultural. I'm not like you. Or I was just like, but
yeah, it
what
creates
do you
a hierarchy.
Think?
Like how is there a hierarchy? I mean, and also it feels almost, I'm going to say almost heretical.
Totally.
Because like the whole notion of Islam is that there is no one between you and Allah.
Yeah.
My dad used to say it is a direct connect. You know, and then to say someone else is in charge of that and you're the subcategory, like, why?
You know, just be empowered and just call yourself whatever you want to call yourself. Just not cultural.
And if I call you Muslim, accept it.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying. And when I say this audience is a Muslim audience, love that.
Take it.
And my jumpsuits.
speaking of claiming Muslim and being awkward about it, how was your TaskRabbit?
You guys, I TaskRabbited for a personal assistant because I'm really behind in life. And if you do those kinds of things like social mediaing and creating newsletters, please contact me afterward. There is a blank check available to you in a negative bank account. I got a Trump supporter. I know. Ask me how I know.
Yeah, how do you know?
Well, you guys say, how do you know? She told me. She's like coming in and, you know, like, I tell her, like, oh, yeah, I work in comedy. And she goes, oh, well, can you tell Seth Meyers that he's a jerk?
Oh, yeah, like you and Seth Meyers are buddy-buddy.
And I was like, oh, and I hadn't watched Seth Meyers, guiltily, I should. And because I don't have cable and I don't have time for Hulu and I'm still catching up. But she is like, tell Seth Meyers he's a jerk. And I was like, huh, because everybody really likes Seth Meyers. And I said, huh, everybody really likes Seth Meyers. And she said, oh, yeah, the liberals. Oh. And I said, continue. And she was like, I don't think it's necessary to be mean.
Oh, I mean, who's sending the bombs? The right is sending bombs to the Democrats right now. I think that's mean.
And it got really creepy because then she was like, you know, there are a lot of me out there. And I was like, what the hell does this mean?
Were you like, there's
a
lot of me out there too?
No, I was terrified.
Did you cut it down short? You're like, I'm good. You can leave now.
Ooh, I was too scared. Like in all movies, as soon as you let on, you are not on the side of the villain. They kill you. I watch a lot of The Americans on FX. And I was just like listening and was like, okay. This is uncomfortable. And I, like, at some point I tried to, like, school her.
Oh,
and
it
got so awkward. Because then I was like, okay, wait, she's, like, one of those centrist Trump supporters. And she's saying people don't know how many centrist Trump supporters there are, which is like, yeah, I'm ambivalent about Nazis. What? You know what I mean? Like, and then, you know, and then she was like, who am I going to vote for? Hillary Killery?
Yeah.
And I was like, this is real Halloween. And I tried to, like, explain to her. She's like, you know, there are two sides to every story. And so, of course, having had the benefit of this podcast experience and understanding binaries and their pitfalls, I reached out and I said, you know, it seems to me that the thing that is bothering you is that it's more than two stories. That maybe what's bothering you is that you see yourself as a third kind of person in this two kind of story sphere.
Okay.
And then she continued to say, okay, okay. And she was like, yeah, because like we all have different opinions. And I said, yeah, you know, the great thing about in a conversation is before you get to conclusions, to just assess. You know, you're here as my personal assistant to show me organization. And as we look at this clutter around the place, maybe we assess what is there. And we think, I wonder why Seth Meyers is mean.
I can't believe you went that deep. I would have just been like, just do my closet. Just put this away.
Okay, but it got more awkward.
Oh, no.
So, okay, as soon as she left, I was like, okay, obviously, that's done. No thank you, TaskRabbit. But then I was at West Elm, and I like couldn't pick out a color, and it was a final sale.
Of a carpet.
And I texted her.
I don't know why you texted. You could have texted me. I know in colors. You have my phone number in your phone.
You always take so long.
She chose a red carpet.
It was so cute. Oh, yeah, red. It was really pretty.
Yeah, I'm just saying. She chose the red carpet for a reason.
We text back and forth now.
That's very
Do
awkward.
Do I have a Trump friend? Is that what I did?
Oh, is this what they mean to make friends with Trump supporters? Maybe this is it.
But this is what I'm saying. This is why it's awkward. I'm like, at the same time, I feel like I have a duty here. I have a duty. And then also I'm like, no, I should shut her out of my life. This person who ironically sees color well.
It's too nice. You don't need to be nice.
But aren't we supposed to reach out and like have the hard conversations?
We're voting in like LA County and it's a blue county anyways.
For now.
For now. Yeah.
Oh my God. All right.
My awkward ask is with my dad, because on Tuesday I was supposed to win $1.6 billion. And
how'd that go?
I didn't win that pot of money yet. And then I was really excited to win potentially $1.6 billion. So I went home and I was talking to my dad and I was like, oh, you know, the lottery's coming up in the future. And then he's like, yeah, I've been watching it. I was like, I bought $2 ticket. He's like, that's haram. Gambling's terrible. Why'd you do that? I was like, it's just a $2 ticket. I bought $30 worth of ticket, but I wasn't going to tell him that.
It begins.
And then I didn't win. But I was like, oh, that whole night, I was like, man, when I win money tomorrow, do I tell him? Do I not tell him? It's going to be so awkward if I, like, buy him a house and be like, where did this money come from? I'm just like, I don't know, Dad. This just happens.
Just the podcast was really great. After the De Young, it just really took off.
I spent a lot of time thinking about what I was going to do with that $1.6 billion and how I was going to hide it from my dad.
Nice. Like, okay, so my dad has this good luck superpower. Like, any contest he participates in, he's won. So we've won, like, a vacuum. We won, like, other appliances, a mattress once. And, like, every time he puts his name in there, like, he wins. And my mom is like, buy a lottery ticket. And he's like, haramest. No, I won't.
I'm going to start texting your dad for, like, numbers. I was like, hey, what number? And I'm just going to be like, do you have 5 random numbers by any chance? He'll be like, I don't know.
Already tried it. He's already on to that. It's not going to work.
But if he did.
But then he's like, if I do, then that will break my relationship with that law, and I will lose that luck because it's haram.
So you just start a foundation and give it all away. That was my go around. I was like, that was what I was.
You would put it to good use. You would do it for good.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. I could do so much at all the nonprofits I've ever worked at if I just had $1.6 billion.
I feel like Gandalf would say, this is the glint of the ring in your eye that I'm seeing. But
yeah. Do you have a Good Muslim Award you want to give out?
Yes. Oh, my God. I'm so excited to give my Good Muslim Award to Sameen Nosrat, the chef.
She's so good.
With the new show, Salt, Acid, Fat, Heat. And my girl Wendy McNaughton's in it, also a San Franciscan. Give it up for her. Does the gorgeous artwork for it. Sameen Nosrat is an Iranian-American and chef. And because she was on that show, I, for the first time in my life, I'm telling you, in a television show, heard the word Iran 4 times. And I realized watching the show that was the first time I'd heard the word Iran on television 4 times.
You didn't watch Dan Rathers growing up? I feel like he said it a lot.
This is what I'm saying. I mean, one, like, A, that's the issue, right? Is, like, it's always about war. It's always, you know. But as a kid, like, I didn't grow up seeing the news. My parents kept that from me.
Yeah.
They didn't want me to know anything about the news, so that when my teacher at recess would say things like, what do you think of Khomeini? I would be able to say, who's that? So I didn't grow up with that awareness at all. And then, like, you know, now as I was watching it, it just hit me and I just started crying. I just was like, this is the first time I've heard the word Iran 4 times in a show on TV. And it's like she's having a great time and talking about her grandma and cooking with her mom. And it's beautiful.
I just want to see her eat. Like, she has so much joy in her face.
She ate lard raw.
But like, I just like loved her expressions. Like, her expressions were so joyous.
Yes.
I was like, you make eating food look really delicious.
See, this is what I'm saying. Fuck modesty. My opinions are facts. No. I love that. Like, I loved us being able to watch a woman have joy without needing to decide whether it was fuckable or unfuckable.
Yeah. And she, like, was just, like, just a normal-looking woman that was really joyous on her face with food. So I'm looking forward to getting the book and reading it.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It looks really, it's really thick.
It's also really helpful.
Yeah.
Salt on ice cream is the best thing I've ever had in my life. I don't know about raw lard, but the salt on ice cream.
Yeah, salt on oatmeal cookies from Teaism are my favorite.
We're all just salivating.
Yeah. My Good Muslim Award is going to go to Sinead O'Connor.
What?
Because she just became Muslim. She converted this week, and it was all over Twitter. And for people, for our youngins who don't know who Sinead O'Connor is, she was a big rock star in the 80s, I guess. I forgot what her big song was, but she sang this song and her like head was shaved and it was like really a big deal. I don't even remember the song. But anyway, she took the Shahada. And there's this video of her circulating on her Twitter where she's doing azan and she's like wearing this like army fatigue t-shirt and her hair's covered and she has like a neck tattoo and like she has like a chest tattoo and she's doing azan. And I don't know, I just really like seeing tattooed women doing azan. I think that's the thing that I like. I like people, because like azan is always supposed to be like a man that's like looks a certain way and has a beard that goes down to his hip and like, you know, he has to be dressed in a white robe. You know, that's like what we're told.
Pubes, no longer than a grain of rice. So many requirements.
Right. You have to listen to a past episode for that to get the backstory on that one.
It's a deep cut reference.
And I've been going to the women's mosque in Los Angeles, and in the women's mosque, they always have women do azan and lead prayer. And I think when women are leading prayer, it's just so beautiful. Because it's something we didn't have access to. So it was cool to see. And it's also, I don't know. Like, I don't know how real it's going to be. Like, I don't know if Sinead O'Connor's going to be like Lindsay Lohan, or is she going to be like Cat Stevens. Like, who knows? Well, we're going to see which path she goes on.
You know, this makes me think about modesty differently, actually.
Yeah.
Like, just as we're talking about this out loud right now, because I'm like, you know, for her singing azan, like, you know, and then she, when she converted, she also decided to wear hijab. Right, to wear the headscarf, right? Because the word hijab means modest dress. I don't know. The notion of celebration doesn't necessarily need to be revoked when we talk about modesty, I'm feeling right now.
Yeah. What do you mean?
I don't know. I'm going through it.
Yeah.
I'm figuring it out.
I mean, like, okay, if talking about Sinead O'Connor's hijab, I think what was interesting about her hijab is the way she wore it, you could still see her tattoos. And I think tattoos are so stigmatized in Islam that I think, like, being able to visually see one was pretty cool.
I don't know. I also feel like there's a template in my brain for, like, white women liberating us, and I feel like I'm trying to, like, mold my mind into this old template, and now I'm like bothered by that too. I'm just like all kinds of struggle in my body right now.
Well, this is it. This is the museum to experience it, because you know this is where the conversations are happening.
Give it up to the DeYoung guys. That's our
thank
show.
Thank you to the DeYoung for having us.
Thank you so much, Faye Dearborn, for having us. The DeYoung. Thank you to all of you. Thank you to our sound engineers in the back, our team. Thank you, everyone.
And that's our show.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar. That's TAZZYSTAR. And Zara at Zara Comedy. That's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Holy
Potluck.
Potluck.
I was obsessed with the greatest immigrant of all time, Scrooge McDuck.